I bid you welcome.
Cara mia.
We all go a little mad sometimes.
We accept a one of us. We accept a one of us.
What's your favorite scary movie?
Wolfman's got an art.
Good evening, everyone, and welcome to Home is Where the Horror Is. I'm your host, Brian.
And I'm Monica.
And we welcome you to episode number two.
So before we get into Brian's picks this week, let's recap some of the horror movies that we actually watched. The first one was The New Invisible Man.
Yeah, and it's technically, I guess, a remake of the original Universal Classics. But it's got a major spin. And you've never actually seen that, right?
I never saw the original Invisible Man, no.
Yeah, that's something we'll definitely have to remedy. Whether it's a pick in the future or not, that's a great, great, just funny, but also very interesting and well-performed movie. But skipping over that, this new Invisible Man, it messes with your mind a little bit.
It definitely has a twist in there, especially at the end. I really like how they make it out. You kind of don't realize, is she really being hunted by this invisible person that she thinks she, you know, is, or is it just all in her head?
Yeah, so without giving any spoilers, I think what we can say of the major... big plot line is Elizabeth Moss plays this girl Cecilia, and the opening scene is this big production of her trying to escape this really fancy high-tech mansion, if you will. And she's clearly had this planned. We don't know why she's escaping. We don't know much information. We just know she's trying to get away. It actually builds a lot of pressure really well. And eventually she escapes, and we come to find out that was her ex-husband. Was it her husband or was it her boyfriend? I can't remember.
I don't remember if it was her husband or her boyfriend.
Yeah. But either way, it's her ex-lover. I think that's safe to say.
I think it was just her boyfriend, yeah.
And, you know, come to find out that he's actually killed himself a few weeks or months later. And that's where the movie really picks up with the suspense, because he was a leading designer in optics, and she's convinced he's made himself invisible. So, as a viewer, you're trying to figure out, did he, or is she just so conditioned to be so paranoid because he controlled so much of her life? What's going on? But I was very impressed with this movie. It's tough to give any major opinions without giving spoilers, but I really, really liked what they did overall.
Yeah, and like I said, the end has a really big twist in it.
Yeah, yeah. This is one of those movies, though, you see it the one time, you get all the twists out, and then it's not that it's not going to be good the next time, but that, like, wow factor's gone. So, I don't know. What would you give this?
I really enjoyed this one. I would give this an A-.
Yeah, I gave it a B+, and it's really just for that fact that I wanted to give it in the A tier, but because that big wow moment happens, and then you're kind of like just along for the ride, I probably couldn't give it higher than that. But either way, I would highly, highly recommend it.
Yeah. And the second movie that we watched this week was new to Netflix, actually, Vampire versus the Bronx.
Yeah, it's not quite as good as The Invisible Man. It's a popcorn vampire flick that the best way to describe it is an urban take on The Lost Boys, Monster Squad, and a lot of the 80s classic horror movies, where it's a band of kids that are getting together and have to stop the vampires. This one just happens to take place in the Bronx, and it's just a big analogy for, like, gentrification in an area. And it just so happens Murnau, which was the director of Nosferatu, Murnau Corporations is buying up all these properties and kind of installing vampire-ness.
I actually think I did enjoy this a little bit more than you did.
That's going to be a running theme on this podcast, for sure.
Just because you know my love for horrible movies.
Yeah, it had its cute moments. I'll give it the, and the vampire designs weren't, they were kind of cool, you know. And there were moments that you laughed harder than you probably should have.
Which is usually the case.
Yeah. I don't know if I would recommend it. Here's the deal. This isn't a movie I would say you have to see or don't have to see. But I would, like, you're going to be entertained while you watch it. But I really just say keep your expectations very low. Like, don't go into it thinking you found a new vampire gem of, like, 2020.
So what would you give this movie?
I'll give it a C+.
I'll give it a B-.
Yeah. Yeah. What was it that you liked the most about it?
I just like the kids. It reminds me of, you know, some of those 80s movies, the kids banding together, you know, we're going to take down these monsters and, yeah.
Yeah. Okay. Is it because it reminded you of so many 80s movies?
I think so, yeah.
Yeah. I mean, it definitely did that. Hey, if anything, maybe it introduces a new generation to vampire lore, because they covered a whole aspects, and I love their training guide is Blade.
Yeah.
Like, that was one part I kind of did enjoy. I'm like, they're all, like, learning off of Blade, which made me feel so much older, because I'm just like, oh, God. Like, that's an older movie to them, because they're so young.
Yeah.
But, no, that, like I said, you know, hey, whatever. I'm all for fun, goofy movies. So, yeah. Check it out if you're really out of vampire flicks to watch this fall or winter.
So this actually leads into your first pick. So speaking of 80s, you know, horror movies, what is your movie for the week?
Well, I had to go with what I consider the quintessential 80s horror movie. And I'm not necessarily saying it's the best one, but it's The Monster Squad. Like, if I think of 80s horrors, you can go Lost Boys, Fright Night, Gremlins, Ghostbusters. You can go a lot of those different ways. But to me, when I think of a monster mash, I got to go with Monster Squad.
That is a great movie.
It's classic. When growing up, when I first saw this, this was the first time I've seen Dracula, Wolfman, Mummy, Frankenstein's Monster, Gillman all together at once. And honestly, to my knowledge, the closest one I would, you know, even come to is like Van Helsing. But like, a lot of movies never have all these monsters like this. The old Universal classics had like Frankenstein meets a Wolfman and House of Frankenstein. And there were monsters fighting, but never with so many classic creatures in one.
And you gotta love how they can all be taken down by a bunch of 10-year-olds.
Yeah. So before we get into the plot, I should just point out that the film was directed by Fred Decker, who also did Night of the Creeps, which is another 80s classic. And one, did you see that?
I don't think I did.
Okay. So that will definitely be one we have to talk about, because it has another just amazing amount of one-liners. But either way, the movie was actually not successful at all. Did you know that?
No.
So it was released in 87. And it had a budget of $12 million, which, not a huge budget, even back then. Like, that's not crazy, but it only made $3.8 million. So, it was a financial disaster.
I feel like, you know, everyone, especially our age, like, everyone knows of the Monster Squad. So, it must have been, like, one of those cult classics that, over time, grew in popularity.
For sure, yeah. And I was, honestly, when I was doing research for this episode, and I saw that, I was kind of shocked myself. I was like, didn't everyone know what Monster Squad? But then when I think back, I was the kid that introduced this to everyone. Mm-hmm. So, you know, did you see this when you were young, or did you see more in your teens?
No, I was young when I've seen this.
Okay. Yeah. So yeah, I mean, this is just, for me, It's an 80s classic. And just like we did with Midnight Meat Train, I think the best way is as we watch movies, we kind of write down some of our favorite scenes. So I'll kind of let you start with what did you think of that opening, that perfect, what I think of that, paying perfect homage to Universal Classic.
Yeah, it was definitely, you know, there's going with the villagers and the torches, you know, dragging along a virgin to try to do this, you know, this ceremony, and, you know, the mist, like it all just...
Dracula in his crypt, yeah. And he goes from turning into a bat to a man. Like, no, it sets the mood perfectly. And then, you know, it kind of throws you for a loop because all of a sudden there's this amulet and there's a vortex, and then you're like, okay, that's a little odd. Like, that's not what you usually see in those type of movies. So, you know, there's something a little more here. Then you just flash forward, and there you are. You're in the 80s.
Yeah.
And it's what I would consider the trademark of, you got the characters you're introduced to. They're in trouble. They're in the principal's office. I feel like every character you follow in the 80s movies, they're in trouble in school all the time. Like, that was something you saw every time.
Bueller.
Yeah. But that shirt he has on, which is one I'm a proud owner of, the Stephen King rules, you got to admit. You got a little more respect, yeah, that I have it now. But, yeah, so let's go through those characters. We got... the main leader, Sean, which is the kid wearing the shirt I love, and then his buddy Patrick, and they're in trouble because
they were drawing pictures of their teacher, and they called her Meow Mix because she looks like a cat. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. They were like drawing weird monsters, and it was all for their monster club.
Yeah.
Because they don't actually become Monster Squad till much later.
Till later, yeah.
And that scene resonates with me very much because I got in trouble a lot for drawing in class, and I still have all my old comp books, and maybe that's something I'll share on our Instagram, of pictures of different monsters, ones I made up, or just whatever random things of violence I saw as a kid. So I doubt you did any of that.
Yeah, a little bit here and there.
You were
actually, me and my cousin actually made a comic book.
Okay.
Yeah.
Do you still have it?
My grandma might.
Okay. We have to try and... wait, what is it about?
It was Bunny Basher and Booger Man.
All right. Well, thank you for joining us for this episode. All right. I'm not going to get that out of my head. So. All right. So then the rest of the group... so then we're introduced to you always got to have the fat kid in a group.
Horace.
And is that not a fat guy name?
It is.
Like,
it
when
is.
You hear it, maybe I'm conditioned from seeing this movie at a young age, but when I hear Horace, I'm like...
I don't think I've ever heard anyone with that name before.
No. So maybe that's why. And poor Horace is being bullied by the kid who... he's actually the actor from... The Wonder Years. He's the older brother. And I know he's been in other stuff, but that's where my mind goes when I see that guy. But who comes and rides up on his fancy little bike looking like James Dean?
Rudy.
That is, that's the bad boy.
Yes.
You know, he's smoking, he's got his glasses. Kind of like, he looks like a 50s greaser almost.
Yeah, meanwhile, he's like 15.
Yeah. And you said they were 10. But really, what are they, maybe 13?
Maybe, yeah.
13-ish. And yeah, Rudy's got to be 15, 16. So you get this weird, like, he's standing up for Horace. And then all of a sudden, like, he wants to be a part of this monster club. Which that kind of was the part that weirded me out.
Yeah.
He's the bad boy. He's the rebel. But he's trying to join these group of young kids to, like, be part of their monster club. Could it be because they have a camera pointed at this chick who apparently doesn't believe in blinds and is just getting changed? Maybe. I don't know. But who else is in the group?
Eugene.
Yep, we got Eugene, which he's not anyone's brother. He's just a younger, even younger kid. He's probably like 10 or 8.
Yeah,
or
he's really young.
And then there's poor Phoebe. She can't join the club. Why is that?
Because she's a girl. No girls allowed, apparently.
Girls can go write comics about Booger Man and Bunny Basher or whatever the hell. But yeah, you can't join the Monster Club. And this is one of the scenes, one of the many scenes before it starts getting into the action, where Sean, Patrick, this group, the way they talk about monsters is like they nailed the dialogue between young kids. And when you debate like things like, well, how, like, you know, Wolfman is just a regular guy with pants, and what happens to him? And then when they're testing Rudy, if you will, about like getting into the club, they're giving him kind of easy, like, how do you kill Dracula? But they're getting so specific on his answers. Like, he goes, daylight? And they're like, haha, no, sunlight. And they're like, what other light is there during the day, fat kid? And then, of course, they ask him about, you know, what two ways are there to kill a werewolf?
And, of course, he says a silver bullet. And when he asks, well, what's the second one? They really don't know, so they just start throwing things out there.
Yeah, and maybe in a bit of foreshadowing, they say, blow him up. Throw him from the top of a building.
And they even said something about his wolf dork.
Yeah, wolf dork. Yeah, this movie likes to say, instead of dick or penis or anything, dork. Which, I was born late in the 80s. I don't remember hearing anyone calling it a dork. So maybe that slang just passed us by. But yeah, like, so you get all this great dialogue. And then what really drove the whole story, and I should mention, and I don't want to backtrack too much, but did you know that this whole movie took place in Louisiana?
I did not.
I don't know where in Louisiana. Like, I don't actually think they specify the city or town, but you have massive events happening. So let's go through them. One, you have a B-52 bomber, it looks like, that's transporting Dracula's casket, Frankenstein's monster in a crate, and I think that was it. But basically, Dracula wakes up, he gets released through the hatch, Frankenstein's crate drops in just a random swamp. So the monsters are automatically put in the same town as these kids. So there's, okay, weird coincidence number one. The one kid, Sean, his mom finds a... What was it?
There was a yard sale, and she brings home, out of, you know, of all things, Van Helsing's original diary.
Yeah, as in the same Van Helsing from 100 years earlier that was fighting Dracula. Yeah. Why is it in Louisiana? We don't really know, but we do know that it's all written in German.
Yeah.
And how do they have to deal with that?
They have to go visit the scary German guy.
Did you ever have that creepy house on your block growing up?
No, not that I can think of. I kind of grew up more like an industrial kind of area, a lot of shops and things like that. We didn't really have many, like, people that actually lived there.
Yeah, we had a couple of those. That was the house to avoid, or, like, it was always dark in there. Like, there was something creepy. And, of course, kids being kids, you make up stories about who lives there. Never made up a story about scary German guy that we come to actually find out. Yes, he's German, but he was a Holocaust survivor. They thought he might have been a vampire or a monster. So he helps them decode this whole journal. And it spells out this battle between good and evil, that every 100 years there's this talisman, which is the amulet we saw at the beginning, has the power to create that vortex, suck all the evil away, or it's so vulnerable that monsters can destroy it, and then the balance of good and evil is completely
flipped on its side.
Yeah. So, okay, he sets a tone. Where is this amulet?
Oh, it just so happens to be in Louisiana.
Yeah, in the rundown plantation that Dracula is now, like, taking residence in. But then, even before we get to that plantation, so Dracula, you know, he assembles his team. And how does he do it? In the most, I don't even know if I would call it ridiculous, but It once again goes to the coincidence, but like run through how we get all the monsters. All
right. So first we have the mummy, who just so happens there's a 5,000-year-old mummy in this museum in the middle of Louisiana that comes to life, disappears. No one can find it. And then you have the werewolf, who I guess he didn't realize he was a werewolf until.
Or he wasn't, and maybe like. That's what this movie doesn't... Dracula has a lot of unique powers in this movie. We don't know, like, did he just will this guy to become a werewolf? Because the guy clearly seems to, like, he knows that change is coming, but it seems to be, like, a new problem for him. And he actually, like, gets shot in the police station because he's trying to get himself locked up before the full moon turns.
Yeah, and then... on the way to the morgue, he actually shifts into the werewolf and escapes.
It was a great transformation scene, too. Like, with the toe claws popping through the boat. The boat. The boot.
You're from Canada.
Yeah. It's all boot this. But, yeah, like, that scene actually creeped me. It always, like, that, like, scared me as a kid. Like, just seeing that alone. I was like, oh, man. Because that's one of the first real monsters outside Dracula you see in the movie.
Yeah. And then after that, they wind up in the swamp and you see the coffin floating out and you realize it's the Gill Man carrying it. And once they open the coffin, that's where Frankenstein's monster is. And just so happens that Dracula has this cane that has little electrodes attached to it and hooks them up to Frankenstein's monster's head and lifts it, and it's a lightning rod, and brings back Frankenstein's monster.
Now, for 100 points, do you know what the cane was homage to? What movie?
I do not.
The Wolfman, the little wolf cane.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
So, because it was a little wolf head, yeah. So, that's my only connection, is that it has to be a connection. But like you said, not only do they have the electrodes, but he flips upside down, and it's, yeah, it is a lightning rod, but it looks like a giant umbrella.
Yeah.
Like, it's... It's crazy. The dude is full of gadgets.
Yeah.
And he has a hearse that apparently can drive through other cars. Like, Dracula in this movie just has the power to summon all this. And you go along with the ride. You don't question it. But unfortunately, now that I looked at it through an analytical eye, I kind of can't get over it. I'm like, why did all this happen here? I guess none of it's important. So, you have Dracula. Now you have the full... his monster team, if you will. And we know his goal is getting the amulet, and he sends Frankenstein's monster off to retrieve the journal from the kids. Somehow, I guess, he just knows where the kids are. There's like a homing beacon on their ass now that they have this journal. And in a scene very reminiscent of the original Frankenstein and straight out of the book, he comes up to Phoebe. She's at the pond. What's going to happen? And she kind of like befriends him. He becomes her new best bud.
Yeah, and she actually sees the boys coming back to the treehouse, and she says, "Take a look at this," and out walks Frankenstein's monster, and they all just lose their shit.
Yeah, and it's a very good scene. It establishes, like, they can't believe, holy shit, there's a real monster. And they first are scared, but they warm up, and they even bring him up in the clubhouse. And once again, the camera's there. He's all about it. But they're humanizing him, and that's the important thing. Like, he's now on their side.
Yeah.
They know why he's there.
Phoebe even tries to teach him to talk.
And he says, bogus.
Bogus.
Yeah, like that. That's his, that, and what was the other one?
Scary.
Yeah. It's, so now you're like, okay, they realize, like, Sean had been trying to like, put pieces together because he heard about the mummy. His dad is a cop. So he's hearing these stories of a guy getting shot and the ambulance flipping over on the night of the full moon. And then apparently Dracula actually called his house and used the name Alucard, which was from the movie Son of Dracula, which Alucard spelled backwards actually is an anagram, means Dracula. In many other things like Castlevania and stuff, Alucard is either the son of Dracula or it's just that's one of his nicknames, if you will. So Sean's sitting there. He puts that together. So he's trying to convince everyone, guys, we got monsters, and we are, you know, we're the Monster Club, Monster Squad. We need to take care of this. First, they don't buy it. Once Frankenstein shows up, they get a little more serious.
Well, Eugene knows there's monsters because there's a monster in his closet, apparently.
Oh, that scene. You need to explain that one.
So Eugene goes into his dad's room and says there's a monster. So they come. Eugene goes into his father's room and tells him that there's a monster in his closet. So they go back into his room, and without even looking in the closet, Eugene's dad opens up the door and starts screaming, "Oh, scary monster! Go away, you monster!" And in fact, the mummy is in his closet.
Is that in your top five favorite moments from the movie? Because it's in mine.
Yeah.
It's just so over the top ridiculous, because you're, why is the mummy there? Like, what was he doing? Did he plan on actually... Was he sent there by Dracula to help Frankenstein's monster, but he then just leaves? The dad's overacting. Like, we don't know, but it's just another crazy coincidence of what is going on in this movie.
Yeah.
But then, we get that mummy scene. And speaking of the mummy, I know we're jumping ahead, but this movie kills the mummy in one of the more unique ways I've ever seen.
It is pretty great. So Rudy has a bow and arrow, and the mummy is pretty much chasing them, jumps on the back of the car, and they get a scrap from his wrappings, and Rudy ties it to an arrow and shoots it to a tree, and he just unravels, which is great.
And becomes just a straight-up skull. Like, I love how every other part of him was basically dust.
Yeah.
But then it was an actual skull. Mm-hmm. And he said, what did he say? See you later, Band-Aid breath. But that movie, that's where everything picks up. And I guess we should go right to, like, now the monsters are looking for them. The monster squad is forming. So what does every 80s movie need?
A montage.
Set to music that I actually still really like. And I never heard a song outside of it. But this montage is one of the more unique ones. Because what you realize really quick is, Rudy does everything important.
Yeah.
Like, he's making stakes. He's making silver bullets in shop class, which I don't know why they have a bullet mold and all that shit. But, like, he's making all the legit weapons.
Stealing the bow and arrows.
Yeah. Like, he's doing... And then Sean is just looking at a map.
Yeah, and making cards. Don't forget, he's making Monster Squad
cards.
Well,
that was Patrick.
Oh, was that Patrick? Yeah.
He's got to make, like, I don't even know if the asshole laminated him. He just looks like he just went to Kinko's and cut a bunch of cards.
But don't forget about Eugene.
He might have had the most important role, after all. He's with big, bold crayon, just writing, "Dear Army guys, monsters are here. Send help." That's it. He folds it up. And keep in mind, I know it's a movie and we're overanalyzing it, but he writes that in the morning. This is 87. He apparently sends that out and gets to the army. And by the end, they show up. So it's just, that's ridiculous. And then part of the montage is like Frankenstein, like wearing like, what are those things called? The loofah wraps around his neck? Like him and like Phoebe are doing dress up and stuff.
Oh, like a boa.
Yeah, the boa. But yeah, Rudy, he's breaking his balls doing all this. So we already talked about how he killed the mummy. But let's go through some of the other kills he had, because they were pretty good.
So, yeah, so they get a showdown at the town square. They were going to go to a church, which was locked. So they decide to do the ceremony in the town square. So they find a virgin.
Oh, God. Yeah, wait, hon. We should probably back up. So the kids now, they know what they need to do. They need to find this amulet because the scary German guy helped decipher everything for them. So their plan is they somehow also know. Oh, because of Frankenstein's monster, I think they know that the amulet is at the house. So they know they got to get to the house, get the amulet, and then have the quote-unquote virgin, which is Patrick's sister, who's the girl that they've been spying on, getting half-nude throughout the movie. She knows a little bit of German, so she's going to read the scroll. But they go to the house, and they're confronted with pretty much all the monsters right up front. And it's actually pretty scary scenes because, well, one, the Wolfman, this is where you get the greatest line. I would say it's one of the most memorable.
Wolfman's got nards.
Yeah, yeah, kick him in the nards. He doesn't got nards. And yeah, he just, okay, he does. But like that scene when they're looking down the three hallways and you got the brides of Dracula, you got Dracula, and you got the Wolfman closing in on them. And they, of course, just so happen to be standing in front of the statue, which is a secret lair. They go down. The amulet's there. They grab it. And this scene, still you and I debated a little bit about this. But what happens?
So Dracula comes for them. And Horace is actually the one that defends them by searing his face with a piece of pizza covered in garlic.
So Monica was of the mindset that Horace did that because he was preparing. I said, no, that's just part of the fat kid image. He just happens to have leftover pizza and aluminum foil in his pocket. So you guys can decide what you think, but I think I'm right here. But yeah, so they get the amulet, and now we're back to where Monica was saying. They went to go to the church. It's locked. So now they have to read the scroll out in the middle of town square. And Rudy sees...
the brides of Dracula.
Yeah, they sees them first. And after we saw, he's pretty damn good with the bow because he kills all three of them. I mean, some of them are close call, but he gets them. And then what happens with the virgin, babe?
So she reads the whole...
Transcript, whatever. Yeah.
And nothing happens. So they're sitting there like, well, why didn't it work? And someone said, you are a virgin, right? And she's like, well, technically.
Yeah. Like, I forget how exact, but she basically goes like, well, there was that guy, Steve, but that doesn't count. And he's like, what do you mean doesn't count? So, yeah, they've been tricked by this girl. And she plays, you know, the dits kind of. So she's not a virgin. Their backup plan is Phoebe because she's there. And this is where I know, like, we talked about this already, but I guess they need a female virgin. Like, they probably can't use a kid, like, one of the boys, because all the other boys are virgins. But, like, Phoebe has to be the one, and the German guy has to, like, help her, like, translate it all. But as they're there, all the other monsters make an appearance. And the Wolfman, he has a very interesting kind of little battle. First, he takes out a bunch of cops after changing in the phone booth and trying to warn Sean's dad. But, you know, you get Sean's dad fighting him in that, like, random warehouse. And how does he try to kill him?
Shove some dynamite down his pants.
Yeah.
Pushes him out a window.
Goes flying out the window. Pieces everywhere. And this scene right here is where I knew I loved werewolves as one of the most badass things, because you've always heard silver is the only way you're gonna kill him. And I thought the same thing. I'm like, well, if you blow him up, like, what if you put a shotgun to his head? No, he like a big magnet just pulls all of his pieces together and reassembles everywhere, because you got his leg over there, his, you know, body's just everywhere. But then who actually takes him down?
Rudy.
So Rudy's already got the mummy, three brides, and the Wolfman. So he's, like, doing it all.
He's the Rambo of the Monster Squad.
He really is. He's the MVP for sure. But somebody else gets the Gillman. And the Gillman makes... It's actually... The Gillman, I love the way that thing looked. We only see him, really, when he lifts the crate. And then this scene, when he comes out of the sewer. He's killing cops left and right. Who's the one that saves the day?
Horace.
Yeah. He's stumbling with the shotgun, manages to get the right one off, and in atypical 80s fashion. You know, the bullies, the ones that were picking on him. Be like, way to go, fat kid.
And he goes, the name's Horace.
Didn't do it with that southern drawl. I don't know
well,
where.
Well, they're in Louisiana. He should.
He did not have one, no. But yeah, so, okay, so Horace kills the Gillman. So really all that's left is Dracula. And we should mention, we already talked, Dracula had a lot of crazy powers. For some reason, this sumbitch loves dynamite. Like,
he does.
He's really pissed at these kids. And you think, like, he goes to their house where the kid's mom is. He knows the dad's a cop. But his way of revenge is tossing a stick of dynamite in their clubhouse. And he goes, meeting adjourned. And he just walk. And then, like, the cops come. And he's bulletproof. Like, nothing can really hurt him. But instead of just, like, snapping their necks or dealing with them any other way, he just tosses dynamite under the car. And boom, that cop's done. But it was interesting because I guess when he's in bat form, he can get hurt. Because when he's in town square,
he gets shot.
And that transformation, that like weird mix when he's like half bat, half guy, like that was another one that always kind of creeped me out because they got like the red light on him. So you can apparently hurt him when he was in bat form. I don't know if they could have fully killed him. But either way, he's the last monster left. So what actually happens with him?
So Phoebe actually does complete the ritual, and they throw the amulet, and the vortex does open. And Sean's dad, Dale, he threw him? Or no. Did
this was my... So at this point, Phoebe's still reading, and he... picks, she didn't finish it yet. He grabs her by the cheek because he knocks a German guy down with a random like blast of light. Like he also has the power of that. So he knocks a German dude down, goes over, picks her up, and he says, "Give me the amulet, you little bitch." And love that, like the fangs, the green light reflecting off him. But she's got some backup. You don't fuck with Phoebe.
Because she's got Frankenstein's monster.
And did he say right away, did he say bogus as he hit him, or what did he say?
I think he did, yeah.
Yeah, I can't, it's going to kill me if it's not bogus, but yeah, he basically says something, and he just bitch smacks Dracula onto the fencing. She finishes it, the vortex opens, now like everything's, even though it's only supposed to suck in evil, like... benches are flying.
Well, if you remember, it's not just evil because in the beginning of the movie, it sucked in the Virgin.
Yep.
And it sucked in Van Helsing.
Yeah. Well, yeah. So that limbo must have the ability to come through that portal because while everything's being sucked in, like you're like, okay, like everyone just has to hold on. Dracula gets himself off the fence just in time. He's like, he really wants to get Sean. He's like, that little son of a bitch has screwed up all my plans. Grabs hold of him. Sean stabs him. Doesn't quite kill him, but does enough to get him off. And who pops out of the goddamn vortex?
Van Helsing.
That scene still bugs me because I guess when you're in limbo, you don't age because it's 100 years later.
And he looks exactly
the same. He's exactly the same. He's still hellbent on getting Dracula. And he apparently knows enough about modern culture. I mean, maybe they had it back then, but he gives Sean the good old... thumbs up, like, good job, kid. I'm passing the torch to you. So you get over that. Dracula's gone, but then I guess the saddest moment of the movie.
Yeah, Phoebe is hanging on to the bench, and so is Frankenstein's monster. And she's reaching for him and saying, don't let go. And, you know, he gets sucked in, and she throws her little bunny scraps.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, he says, you say I love you?
What does he say? It's, I think he just says, like, goodbye.
Oh, yeah, goodbye.
Maybe he says, I love, yeah, he says something to that effect. But, yeah, it actually is kind of, like, heartwarming. You're like, oh, poor Frankenstein's monster. He was good. But they all get sucked in. Everyone's, like, checking. All the main crew is okay.
Yeah, Vortex is now closed. Evil is gone. And then who shows up at the
fucking
end?
Fucking army. thanks to Eugene and this, you know, dude with the cigar that you see in every army related thing. And he's like, all right, we're the monsters. Like, they're ready to accept it also, yeah, that there are actual monsters. Like, and they did roll up like ready squad deep. Like, we got tanks and shit. And he's like, who's in charge here? And I love how Sean, like his dad, who's a cop behind him, lets Sean do the talk. Yeah. He's like, we are. Who are you? The Monster Squad. And that goddamn card comes out. And once again, the army guy kind of like, he's like, huh? But he just accepts it.
You're like, all right.
It's, I guess there really is no other way to wrap up that movie. And it is filled with inconsistencies. It's filled with a lot of weird, like, you just gotta completely eliminate your mindset. But what are you scoring this?
I'm gonna give it an A.
That's acceptable. I would like a little higher because I'm giving it an A plus. And no, I'm not saying this is the best movie ever, and I know it's not perfectly made, but I can't think of any other better complete different monsters together in the 80s than this. And it's just cheesy fun that every single time I watch this, I never get tired. And I pick up on a few little things. Don't know if I'm picking up on any more since we analyzed the shit out of this. But yeah, no, highly, highly recommend it.
Definitely one of my favorites.
Would you say I picked a better movie than you did last week? Listen, just because you think Bradley Cooper's hot doesn't mean it's a better movie.
I didn't say it was a better movie. It's for different reasons.
Okay.
Okay, so leading from there, what is your myth going to be this week, and how are you going to tie it to the movie?
Initially, I wanted to go straight vampires, werewolves, or something, but it's a little too generic. We are trying to focus in on, I think, more, not even obscure, but very specific myths. Going with the theme of old scary German guy, I was like, you know what, let me look up some German myths, and let me pick one that might be related to one of these monsters. So I found one that is something I've certainly never heard of before researching before this episode, and that is the Nachtzurer. So that's German for night waster. It can also be translated to Nacht, which means after or night, or Zeren, which means living off. This creature, the easiest way to describe it, is a mixture between a vampire and a ghoul. As we saw from Supernatural, what does Dean call it?
Oh, the werepire.
Yeah, well, that's when he thought it was a... But he did combine vampire and ghoul a different way. What do you call it? Like, like a ghoulpire or something? Like,
oh, yeah, ghoulpire.
Yeah, like, so it's a very unique creature in a sense that it could be easily mistaken for a vampire because it only comes to life after being dead, and it does need flesh and blood to survive. Biggest differences with this particular creature is, one, you don't become a Nachtzurer by something biting you or scratching you. It's not transferred.
Which was different from Supernatural.
Yeah.
Because Supernatural, they turned people.
Yeah, like Supernatural hit on some of the things about it, but like they got a lot. They just added some flavor to it. So you can't. So the only real way you can be turned is after you die. It's usually by a suicide, and a lot of times it's associated with drowning. But also, if you were one of many people who died from a plague or an outbreak, and essentially you were the first one to die, they associated you as a Nachtzurer because sometimes these creatures were like almost like a form of pestilence and disease. Like, they represented that. But the most general is, once again, you usually died by suicide. So right off the bat, if they bite you, if they go after you, you're not going to turn.
So what were their, like, physical characteristics? Like, did they look still humanoid, or?
Since they are ghoulish, they would look like more, I guess, you know, the sunken eyes, the lips pulled back. So you don't really have fangs, but you have, like, more jagged teeth for whatever reason. And I guess, like, you know, with the old thing that your fingernails keep glowing, growing, because they could probably had a claw out of it. They're probably sharpened, but for all intents and purposes, it's a human, humanoid, I'll say. They don't have many supernatural abilities except randomly they can turn into a pig. And I know that sounds weird, and you're giving me the look. But essentially the idea there was one of the first things they did when they woke from the grave was either eat themselves or eat their shrouds. Like, they are devourers of everything. Why are you laughing?
Eat themselves.
Damn it. All right, once again, we're going to end this episode. Yeah, so they're sometimes referred to as shroud eaters because they would just eat whatever they could. But their next stop was almost always they would go and eat their family. So they would disguise themselves as a pig, show up on the farm, and in Germany, like in the particular areas where this legend was most notable, like Bavaria and Silesia, like there were lots of pig farmers. So you could disguise yourself when everyone's asleep, you wake up, and they devoured their families. They would just continue that hunting pattern, but because they're ghouls, they could also eat dead bodies. So this is, once again, how they're much different than vampires. And sunlight doesn't do anything to them.
So it's not necessarily the blood they need, just more so the flesh?
Yes. Yeah, they just need to constantly be devouring. But there are some ways you can identify them very easily. So the first, and I showed you the picture before we got started, and I'll put this probably on Instagram or something, but basically, they have their left eye open while they're in the casket, and they're holding the opposite finger's thumb in their other hand. So almost like a child, like doing something weird, like they would exhibit these odd behaviors.
So is this like burial, like as they're burying, they look like this, or this is like if they dig them back
up? I think if you dig them back up, or if you suspected someone of being this, like you would go and check the grave even after they murdered, and they'd be laying like that. Which I think if you saw anything with a one eye open, you'd be kind of like, what the shit? But this, you know, it was a pretty persistent myth in Germany. And there was actually some pictures released of, I believe it was closer to East Germany and other Slavic areas that had beliefs in vampires and Nachtzauberers. So one of the remedies for these creatures was, one, to make sure anyone that died the ways we discussed, they would put stones, bricks, or something in their mouth so that they couldn't bite through when they woke up, and they would essentially starve themselves to death. Or you could go a little more extreme. And the only way to kill one of these creatures once they are up is by decapitating them and usually putting coins in their mouth to kind of remind them that they were dead.
So kind of like putting the coins in the eyes to get across to Hades?
Yes. And supernatural, that was the one thing they kind of got right, is you need it, you know, they called it, you need pure copper.
They called it the Charon's Opal?
Yeah. So you just basically needed something to remind the Nagzor that they're dead. And chopping off their head was not enough. And it was actually kind of comical how supernatural handled it, because Dean's fighting it. He's like shooting it with silver. He's like, okay, that didn't kill him. That slowed him down. Chopped off his head. The head's still moving. But yeah, they were notoriously hard to kill. So all in all, it's very interesting of an idea, but I can kind of understand why you don't see more examples in media. We've saw it in Supernatural, and there's a lot of like random video games that have them as creatures, but they almost create them more as like specialty monsters than what we're actually describing here. But I don't know, what do you think of these things? Like, they're kind of creepy, the idea of like, if you lose someone in your family that way, that they're gonna come back and kill you now. Like, that's pretty messed up,
especially if they come back as a pig. I like pigs.
Damn it. That's not the point here. All that I said and you took away, I like pigs. You just ate bacon this morning. What the fuck are you talking about? You obviously don't like them that much. Yeah, but no, this myth, like I said, it's mostly Slavic areas outside of northern Germany and northeastern Germany, I'll say.
So interesting fact, when they were talking about the pennies on how to kill them, it is actually true that pennies before 1982 were 95% copper. So anything after that, It's actually 97% zinc and only 2.5% copper. So
copper's much more expensive.
Yeah. So if you know you do come across one of these things, you're gonna have to make sure you get a penny before 1982.
Or just shove a stone in her mouth before you bury them.
Yeah, you could do that too.
That's like I said, I do like this myth, and I didn't want to go straight vampire. And Germany actually has a few other interesting vampire myths. This one just stuck out to me as, like, that's kind of weird, but interesting at the same time.
Yeah.
So, yeah. Any other thoughts on that?
No.
All right. So then we'll move on to my final topic and the place. I had to stick with the German theme here. And this one also ties into the Monster Squad because it's apparently the last place where a werewolf was killed. So the legend is of a place called Moorbach in Germany. And the Moorbach monster is also known as the Moorbach werewolf. And once again, this is the last known site of a werewolf killing. However, after doing more research than I probably should have on this topic, there's a little bit of a debate whether the werewolf was actually killed or from Moorbach or this little town near called Wittlich. After lots and lots of research, the two prevailing theories is, one, there was a U.S. airbase called Hahn Air Base where people were stationed at Moorbach, which was a munition station for the U.S. Air Force and Army and all that. So this the tale actually comes to us from 1988, so fairly recent. These GIs were out there. They were on patrol, and in the village, there's this whole backstory as to there's a shrine at the crossroads of Wittlich and Moorbach, and there's a candle lit there. And if at any point that candle goes out, a werewolf will roam the streets.
Are we talking like a regular, just plain old candle, or?
Yeah, it doesn't go into great depth as to like how the shrine looks or anything, but it just goes that there's this crossroads, and I'll get to the backstory of that shrine, but this is a known story with the locals, and it's spread to everyone that's stationed there, that it's a known, like, urban legend, if you will. But these two GIs were walking back from patrol. They walked past the shrine and noticed, oh, the candle's out. And one of them joked to the other one, like, uh-oh, there could be a werewolf on the loose. Minutes later, there's sirens that there's a perimeter breach at one of the sections of their base. Now, it's a huge base that backs up to the forest. So they go over to this area, and as they approach, they see something that's quite tall that looks like a man, but it has wolf-like features. So think like a biped that just looks like an atypical wolf man and those type of depictions. The thing turns around, looks at them, and clears a 7.5-foot fence with one jump, and then proceeds a little bit. As they come a little closer, it turns around, and its glowing yellow eyes are staring at them. They freak out. They go. They tell everyone. They bring tracker dogs and everything to the spot. The dogs start sniffing, go out of control, and will not proceed any further. And from that point, they got the candle relit and kind of left it at that.
I wonder if it could be, like, some kind of animal, like, with mange, like maybe a small bear or something like that. And, you know, if it's going to be big and because.
Yeah, it you don't know. I mean, so I actually found sites where there are people who identified themselves to a degree of, like, I was stationed in this area from this year to this year. My call sign was, like, Alpha Foxtrot, da 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 da. I was a sergeant. And there's other people that came on that kind of helped verify these people. And they gave accounts of this thing, of this situation. So it's actually, like, known to U.S. soldiers and that were stationed in that area. Now, some of them wrote it off as, yes, local wildlife. It was probably a big cat that just maybe they thought it was standing, or maybe it was scaling the fence, or maybe it was. Apparently they had these crazy big ass boars from the forest that was in a hole in the fence. That how this connects to a werewolf,
yeah.
I don't know. But the coincidence of there being a shrine, the candle being out and them seeing this could have just been hype. Could it all be made up? Sure. But like I said, there was enough other accounts from that area that it's just very odd. Like, could this actually be a legit case of a werewolf? Or is it just
mass hysteria?
Exactly. And maybe they were riled up from the locals and hearing the stories, and they kind of all convinced each other, like, oh, no, yeah, it was a werewolf.
Well, you're definitely, your mind can play tricks on you, and especially you're being told all these tales, and, you know, you can make yourself see things that really aren't there.
And I fully believe that. My one biggest issue with this whole myth and place is, why the hell is a candle being the thing that holds back the werewolf? Like, of all the things that, and I kind of have an answer for that, but it sounds ridiculous. And let me get my handy dandy notebook here. Oh God, I've been watching Blue's Clues with Logan. All right. So the story behind the actual shrine, and I did research. I found multiple sources that actually can validate this, but not the actual guy. So let me just preface it with that. There was a guy that was in Napoleon's army who was a deserter named Thomas Johannes Baptist Schweitzer.
That's a hell of a name.
So after the disaster at Moscow, and I know you're a history expert, so
I am the worst at history.
You know, Napoleon was defeated, and you know his forces were starting to flee. So this guy, Thomas, was fleeing with a couple Russians when he happened to be passing by Whitledge on his way home. He noticed there was a farmhouse. Initially, they were just going to go there, kind of like hide out. When he goes in, there's a father with some sons, and they decide to brutally murder these guys. The wife of the farmer happens to see this. So she really quickly, I guess she has the power to, she curses just Thomas, because I think she sees him doing most of the actions, and her curse, I'm trying to look for the exact wording here, she goes, from now on at each full moon you will change into a rabid wolf. He proceeded to crush her skull in after hearing that. And then apparently for months after, from the reports from the Russians that were with him, he did start acting much crazier. Like, he was already a bad guy, clearly, but he was murdering, raping, pillaging, like, at just a crazy rate, to the point where they were getting scared of him. So they left him alone. He went off, found another group, and this just continued for months and months. Eventually, he came across another farm, and it's more specifically a farmer's daughter, Elizabeth Burrie, and once again, he rapes her. But she survives. He doesn't get to kill her. So the father rallies up a bunch of people, and they find him outside of Moorbach. So I guess Whitledge touches right up against Moorbach, and they kill him, hang him, or just basically however they execute him, they bury him and build the shrine on top, because they know there's a curse on him. That is the candle. And this candle basically designates, like, that curse. So that's kind of the explanation of why the candle may or may not work.
Oh, because he's buried underneath of it.
Yeah.
Gotcha.
So there was never specific accounts of them seeing that guy turn into a werewolf. However, the interesting thing is the woman that he raped, that farmer's daughter, Elizabeth, she did bear a son. And he has a lineage that still went on today. So the belief is, if the candle goes out, someone from his lineage is the one becoming the wolf.
Oh, that makes sense.
So, I mean, I hope they're keeping an eye on this goddamn family. I mean, could you imagine if that is a thing, like, you're born into, and people are like a fucking candle goes out and everyone's like staring at you,
yeah,
like fucking in fangs. Like, I don't know. I love the idea of something like this, because it goes up to 1988. Like, a lot of these myths and places we talk about, they're so old, like, whatever. But sometimes you hear these unsubstantiated or substantiated situations, and I don't know. What do you think of it?
It's very interesting. Like I said, you know, it could be just mass hysteria. It could be just, you know, different animal life. But you never know. There's some strange things out there.
So are we going to do a little road trip to the German countryside?
There's a couple things over there I want to check out.
I think I might have to try to look up this family line on, like, Instagram, Facebook. I'll be like, what the fuck is this dude up to? Like,
I have a very big German background, so maybe we're related.
As do I. But, yeah, like I said, this one was my easy connection to Monster Squad because of the werewolf. And being the last place that a werewolf was killed, as Monica knows, I like werewolves.
Yeah, they call him the Wolfman.
Yep, there are stories behind that too. I guess we don't need to get into them, but needless to say, you'll probably hear me reference and talk about werewolves throughout many, many of these podcasts. This is like her connection with Bunny Basher and Booger Man or whatever the hell.
We were 10.
So, anything else? Any other thoughts on that?
Yeah. I think you covered it all.
All right. Well, next week is once again Monica's picks, and I'm looking forward to it. I think we're still going to get some good stuff out of her before we start hitting the bad. I hope. But we want to say thank you to everyone who has listened. If you haven't already, please make sure you give us a subscribe, whether it's on iTunes, Spotify, Stitcher, Google Play. And if you can, please follow us on Instagram, on Twitter, basically all the social media apps. So with that, we want to say have a good night.
And until next time.